Welcome back to Download Here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, new plays on stage at the Victory Gardens Theater running through March 11th. It's called Breach. Well, that's just part of the title. The full title is Breach, a manifesto on race in America through the eyes of a black girl recovering from self-hate. It's a play written by New York playwright Antoinette Nwandu. Nwandu has written this comedy as a love letter to black women and really about learning to love yourself. Even though Nwandu is based in New York, her work is very familiar to Chicago audiences. Her play Passover was on stage last year at Steppenwolf. It created quite a stir as a couple of theater critics drew the ire of the theater community for insensitive reviews. The play was about race and white privilege, and some felt that the critics in question missed the point entirely. Nwandu herself penned a great piece in American theater about the controversy. So needless to say, her follow-up play is much anticipated, and it's on stage at the Victory Gardens at the Old Biograph Theater in Lincoln Park through March 11th. Award-winning playwright Antoinette Nwandu is my guest tonight at the big table. Antoinette, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is great to meet you and to have you. And let's talk about Breach. This play is a play that's a comedy. And I'm interested in, why don't we start with the title? Because when you read that title, you're like, oh, that's some serious stuff. But but really, when I read some interviews, there's a little tongue-in-cheek to it.
Yeah. It definitely is tongue-in-cheek. And I don't want to shy away from the dramatic element. I mean, when I do comedy, I love getting big laughs. And so far in the previews, the audiences have been belly laughing, but we're going to go through some pretty deep stuff,
right,
too. So it's a rock and roll kind of adventure, a little bit of a roller coaster, especially for the protagonist, Margaret, who's just played beautifully by Karen Blackmore. She's just holding down the fort night after night. So yeah, I mean, the title, I think, is a bit tongue-in-cheek. It's a bit much, I think, when you see it on the poster or when you say it. And I think it's a bit much because the main character is a bit much. I think her life is a bit much. She's a mess. I don't think she's an anti-hero, because the story does end on an up for her. It does end well. I don't want to give away how that happens, yeah, but I will say that it is definitely a comedy. But I wanted to see what it would feel like to write an African-American woman in the modern day who is not wise or well-intentioned most of the time, or strong and fierce. There are a lot of different silos, I think, that black female characters get put into.
That's considered a contemporary stereotype.
Totally. And so I was just like, well, what if she's just a mess and a kind of horrible person, and you know,
like all of us.
Exactly, right. Just someone trying to figure her stuff out. And so we sort of watch her do that, and we watch her attempt to run from doing that, really, and then life kind of puts her in a half Nelson, I think, and she just kind of has to deal with her.
I love when you read the play, and I'm guilty of this as well. When it came up, like, do you want to interview Antoinette? I'm like, yeah, she's working on a new play. And then I read the play, I'm like, oh, this is going to be some deep stuff. When you hear Breach, a manifesto on race in America through the eyes of a black girl recovering from self-hate, I don't necessarily pick up the comedy in it, but obviously, reading that and hearing you talk about it, but then also reading other interviews, there's something great about using comedy. And when you read that and you zero in on it, mm-hmm, you can understand the self, I don't want to say deprecation, but the idea that it's kind of making fun of how heavy this is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I don't want to say making fun of, but I do want to say it approaches a topic that usually requires a deep amount of emotional labor and a deep amount of sort of, you know, hand-wringing on the parts of audiences. And it says, look, if we can all just sit and laugh first at these situations, and what I have been observing audiences is if we laugh and we get ourselves to that open place, then when there is a gut punch, if there is a gut punch, it lands a lot more poignantly because we're already open from the laughter. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of in the plotting of the play. That was one of my goals, to just get people open and sort of laughing at the ridiculousness.
Yeah. I was going to ask about it. What comes first, the gut punch or the humor?
The humor, I think, has to come first. We have to get comfortable first. We've got to, like,
in the writing process. Do you approach it saying, I want to take on this issue. What's the best way to take on this issue? Or are you like, I got a good idea for a comedy?
No. For me, the tears always come first. And I'm thinking of, like, even when I was very young and very dramatic and very maudlin, and my mom would just be like, oh my gosh, like, you're so overdramatic about, like, tiny things, you know? Like, oh, this boy at school doesn't like, I mean, the same stupid stuff that everybody is. And so I think I get out my first drafts, and it's like, I'm writing the most important play in the world, and it's the heaviest, deepest thing. And then I step back and I'm like, okay, then I just start to laugh at myself, which is my own coping mechanism for like, okay, the sky is not quite falling yet.
Yeah.
And so I think it's that process of revision for me that always sort of, I can see the places where the levity is there.
And that's so important as an editor and as a writer, when you think about, you really want to approach a sensitive topic or something that you're passionate about, and there's emotion that goes into it, to have that ability to bring humor into it, to bring comedy, or essentially step back and say, okay, maybe I'm going a little too, as you said, overdramatic. Mm-hmm. That's super important, because the reason that that stuff will be out in the world is because some people don't have that mechanism.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that I definitely inherited from my grandmother, who actually recently passed, who is somebody who would always say, like, look, if you're still laughing, you're still alive. You know what I mean? And that was sort of a motto and a mindset that she brought to the world. She was like, okay, you know, the situation can be bleak. The situation can be depressing. The situation can create fear or tension inside of you. But if you can find something in it, even sometimes in the very circumstance where you're like, well, look at where we are now.
Yeah, right.
Like, we are up this river. We are up this creek without a paddle. Isn't that funny? Okay, now we're laughing. How do we move forward?
Yeah.
Which is definitely what I wanted this play to be about a woman, you know, like I said, in a mess, but trying to move forward.
One of the topics that you take on in the play is this idea of self-loathing or self-hate. And that is that's a very important issue, and it's a relatable one. When you are doing a play that has a lot of humor and comedy, but it is when you really want to take on something serious about that, especially particularly how it happens to African-American women, how do you do that? How do you make sure that the audience knows that this is really an exploration of a serious topic?
I mean, I think it's really just in the plotting, taking them through the storytelling. More so than Passover, this play I hesitate to call it naturalistic, but it does follow sort of a rigorous, well-made play structure, whereas Passover is a little bit more surrealist, a little bit more idea driven.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really just in the circumstances that we find this character. And I think that the ways in which I see her self-loathing, the main character, Margaret's self-loathing, demonstrating itself are very wide ranging. I also want to say that I think that, take it back to that saying that I hear a lot of people saying now, if you can't love yourself, then you can't love other people,
mm-hmm.
right? How are you going to love someone else before if you can't love yourself? So it's not only self-loathing racially, though that is definitely a huge locus. It's also, you know, Margaret has class issues. There are generational issues. So there, you know, every time she intersects with a different character, I see this loathing also being demonstrated in her inability to be kind
mm-hmm.
to people who are different from her because she has a real problem with her own self-worth.
And that's what makes it relatable. Beyond, you know, anyone who might be coming to the audience and to see the play at the Victory Gardens Theater who may be like, well, I'm not a black woman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know,
yeah.
Maybe I don't have self-hate that I'm not a black woman.
Right.
But understanding that there are ways that self-loathing and self-hate and even serious issues like race and even more curious issues like code switching
mm-hmm.
can play out in different forms that are relatable to everybody.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think that, you know, and this is something that I say with all of my work, as a black woman and as someone who is, you know, deeply invested in literature, I find myself in characters who don't look like me or have my experiences all the time. That's sort of the beauty of literature. We can take off our skin and go into the mind or the story of another character. So yeah, I think a lot of what Margaret is dealing with has to do with the intersection of different demographic markers. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get people of different generations together, then there's going to be a kind of loathing, a response that can come from loathing. Or when you get people of different class together, there's, you know, I don't want to give it away. There's one of my favorite scenes in the first act has to do with Margaret and another character named Catalina, played very beautifully by Karen Rodriguez. And the entire conflict in that scene, because they're two women of color, so on one hand you think, oh, you know, women of color. But it's like, no, there's a huge class divide there. And Margaret can't, like, she just can't get past that on a certain level until she does. So yeah, so I think that that, you know, regardless of who you are and regardless of what your cultural background is, I think we've all had moments where we've met someone else and that person triggers in me a discomfort with myself that I then project onto that other person. It's just, I mean, unfortunately, that's like the human thing to do,
human,
you know?
Yeah.
Project all of my crap onto everybody else.
That might be what they mean by human nature, right?
Totally, totally. And it's like, until we can see it and hopefully laugh about it and hopefully not cause too much harm. I mean, some of the more serious elements of the play are about Margaret causing harm and realizing that she is actually causing harm. So if we can learn from it and grow, then, I mean, that's that's what the whole journey is about.
Award-winning playwright Antoinette Nwandu is my guest tonight. Her play, Breach, A Manifesto on Race in America Through the Eyes of a Black Girl Recovering from Self-Hate, is on stage at the Victory Gardens Theater, running through March 11th. We'll take a quick break here, and we'll have more with Antoinette at the big table. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, award-winning playwright Antoinette Nwandu, whose new play, Breach, A Manifesto on Race in America Through the Eyes of a Black Girl Recovering from Self-Hate, is on stage at the Victory Gardens through March 11th. She's also the playwright of Passover, which was at Steppenwolf. We'll talk about that coming up as well. Why be a playwright? And I asked, but I mean, you grew up in L.A., right?
So you
wasn't necessarily that you were exposed to theater, and it was something that at an early age you're going to be in the arts. Talk a little bit about how you got to this part of being a playwright.
Yeah, no, I definitely was not exposed. Theater was not a part of my childhood. I was a child of TV, and TV is still sort of where I naturally lean to. So theater for me, when I was in high school a little bit, but mostly in college, I began to get exposed to the theater a bit more regularly. And honestly, I think that I found in theater something very similar to what I found in church. I did grow up in the church, and I went to church, to a very conservative Baptist church. And I mean, you know, I was a 2 to 3 time a week kind of churchgoer. Wow. As a kid, my whole family was, my immediate family. And so there is something, I am conditioned to enjoy something about people, a collective, a group of people coming together, facing the same direction, looking for a message, looking for transformation, looking for catharsis, looking for some sort of seed of something that will help me figure out how to approach life, how to fix my problems in my own life, how to get through a very difficult situation. So at a period in my life when I was, you know, especially in college, that was the first time when I could choose to step back from church and, you know, discover what everyone else does on Sunday. One of the things that I was then exposed to was this wonderful thing called theater. And I was like, oh, it's a lot of the same feels, but without some of the stricture and without some of the rules. So I think that was how I was sort of primed for the drug that is theater.
And there's a lot of ways to get into theater. You could be an actress, you could be a producer, writer, things like that. What was it about writing about the issues of your life that what grabbed you? What brought you in to say, you know what, I can do this. I'm going to be a playwright.
I don't think it was ever as bold as like, I can do this. I think it was more like, oh, when I do find myself doing this, it's cathartic. And I definitely think, especially in the very beginning of my career, before it even felt like a career, theater was my very first therapy, before I was able to then actually go to therapy, which is wonderful. but I definitely think, you know, externalizing the problems, taking an objective step back, creating a world in which there is movement and which there is a journey where it's like, okay, the given circumstances at the beginning of the play are X, Y, Z. And if I create these characters that some of which, you know, share certain characteristics and I move them around in different ways, how can I sort of game out different, you know, scenarios? How can I sort of game out what's happening here and think through problems that have kind of been just emotional mass in my brain and in my brain space? How can I put that onto paper and kind of exorcise whatever the demons are, get them out of there? So in a lot of ways, it was just, not just, but it was this therapeutic thing that, and there was a huge period of time between when I started writing and when I started showing my plays to other people. So that second.
Why? What took so long? Because you're writing.
Because I wasn't convinced that it was going to be a career. I originally thought I was going to be an English professor, and then I got super frustrated by academia and by how removed it is from daily life. And then I actually entered the theater space, the theater community, as a critic, oddly enough, because I could get a lot of free tickets, because I realized very quickly, like, oh my gosh, like everybody else knows all these plays and theater is unfortunately kind of expensive. So how do I get to see just a lot of plays for free and talk about them. And so when I then made the switch to being a playwright for real, that was when I was like, okay, I've done a little bit of writing already, but now I've got to start showing this. Yeah. To people.
Well, I mean, I love that part of your background of criticism and being a theater critic, because as you just said, it's a way to talk about the plays. And a lot of great playwrights, and especially when we talk about contemporary playwrights, the point of it is to give us issues and put up a mirror to what's happening in mm-hmm. our society so that we can have conversation. That's mm-hmm. what makes the theater so great. Mm-hmm. Why are you so good at it?
I mean, the plays
that
you've
done. No, but I mean, the plays that you've done, because you could say at one point, like, a playwright's really good at it when you get 4+ stars and all this kind of stuff and all that. And you have that. But you also have this ability, innate ability with the plays Passover, and I'm sure that will happen with Breach as well, which is on stage at the Victory Gardens, to really do that, get people talking. And we'll talk specifically more about what happened with Passover. But there were play about race, and people came out of there, and they were charged up. People mm-hmm. really wanted to talk about it. So in a way, you were able to accomplish that goal.
Thank you. That's a really wonderful thing for you to say. I don't know. It's hard to critique yourself. I will say this, however, and again, I think this does go back to, it's interesting. I think I was thinking about this the other day. For better or worse, growing up in the conservative church community I did, I was exposed very early and very often to the sense and the idea of truthful confession and the idea of this outpouring. And, you know, in the church, obviously, it's before God and oftentimes before the community of, like, I feel burdened by something. I cannot keep it inside. I have to confess. Right. I have to make amends and restitution. So stepping back from that, but realizing that that is still a very much a part of my makeup, I do think that a kind of truth-telling and a kind of vulnerability that always starts with, like, and I don't know if I can curse on the show or not, but...
No cursing, but...
No, okay. But I am effed up. I am messed up.
Yeah, there you
up.
Go. That's perfect. There
you know what I mean? Yeah. And it always starts looking at me like, okay, there is a thing on this road to wellness or happiness or whatever you want to call it, contentment. There is something inside of me that is not functioning correctly. Hmm. And I have to get that out. And I have to be honest about what I think it is.
My guest in studio tonight, award-winning playwright Antoinette Nwandu. She is the playwright of her new play, Breach, A Manifesto on Race in America Through the Eyes of a Black Girl Recovering from Self-Hate, is on stage at the Victory Gardens through March 11th. She also was the playwright of Passover, which was at Steppenwolf last summer. We'll talk more about that coming up here. Let's take a break for the news. We'll come back. Antoinette Nwandu, my guest at the big table. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download Here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, award-winning playwright Antoinette Nwandu. Her play, Breach, A Manifesto on Race in America Through the Eyes of a Black Girl Recovering from Self-Hate, comedy, in some ways, is on stage at the Victory Gardens Theater running through March 11th. Also the playwright who penned Passover, which was at Steppenwolf this past summer, which I mentioned at the beginning of the hour, really caused a stir. There was... Not just with the audiences that were walking away, but with criticism. And you as a former critic, it wasn't the fact that some critics were coming away from the play at Steppenwolf with negative reviews. It was they were disagreeing with the work. And it was a way that really shed light not only on race in this country, but had to do with the role of the critic. And the Chicago theater community, I've never seen it. I'm a part of that community. I understand it. And I've never seen... such a viral sensation around defending a piece of work. Did you feel that? Being from New York, did you recognize what was happening around your play at Steppenwolf?
Yeah, it was a very quick, it was sort of like a quick and dirty introduction to the Chicago theater community, partially the community of color, but I would say at large, you know, the entire Chicago theater community, and just this idea of involvement, of direct engagement, of direct confrontation, and sort of a level of discourse mm-hmm. that I found incredibly refreshing. I mean, once I got distance, at the beginning it was actually just a little painful, but once I got distance and rest, because opening a new show is always a pretty exhausting, in the best possible way, but a pretty exhausting experience. But once I got rest and distance, I was like, wow, you know, this is a really spectacular thing that's happening. Yeah. That people are being very open and honest about what it is they think and what it is they're tired of. And so, yeah, it was a pretty unique and special experience.
And Well, I think at the center of it, which, and you were putting on multiple hats, being a playwright and also a critic at one point, was this concept of critics pushing back on work. It's one thing to give it one star, say, mm-hmm. I didn't like the play, I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. But it got more philosophical in a way that they didn't agree with the threads. They didn't agree with that's how race is in America, mm-hmm. or how one scene or another. This point where there was a lot of head scratching into whether or not what your play was doing was a reflection of what was really happening in America. Mm-hmm. And when I see it from the outside, I didn't see the play. But when I see it from the outside and see all of the discourse, I'm like, well, that's kind of what theater's supposed to do, right? Mm-hmm. Am I assessing that properly? Does that seem like the accurate portrayal of what happened here?
I think that, honestly, if I look in the larger context, it seems to me, was the straw that broke the camel's back. That there were specific critics who, for decades, had had pushback from the community in different ways about the voice, the point of view of the criticism. And so with my play, look, I actually have a certain, you know, as a former critic, my muscle of criticism is oftentimes stronger than my muscle of creation, I think. And so one of the things I've had to learn when I put on the playwright's hat is how to turn the critic off, because mm-hmm. I actually am a very critical person. So even with this play now, you know, no one can tell me that something's wrong with my play that I haven't already seen. And at a certain point when I finally put the play up, it's less about, oh, I've gotten it right. And it's more about, okay, I can live with the way it's working.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I solve the problems that I can.
That I can, right. Exactly. And at a certain point, you just have to give it a hug and step back. So I welcome thorough criticism. I welcome criticism that speaks to the craft. I welcome criticism that speaks to the way in which the play is interacting with the audience. What I think the Chicago theater community had a problem with, though, is criticism that comes from a place of, I think, respectability politics. Mm-hmm. And instead of saying, oh, this play isn't working, it's saying, oh, the play works, but I disagree with the worldview that it presents. And because I disagree with the worldview, almost a political disagreement, I'm going to give the play fewer stars. And I'm going to almost reprimand the play from sort of this paternalistic place of, now, you've gotten it wrong because mm-hmm. you're not shoring up the worldview that I happen to hold.
Yeah.
And that's not criticism of the work at the end of the day.
It seems to be somewhat anti-theater in the way that there is a lot of theater premises, and regarding the theater community here in Chicago, and the Off Loop Theater and the downtown, where there will be premises that aren't necessarily speak to what the critic has gone through, and that's usually not how they will approach the work.
I mean, right,
race is a different thing. It feels like, I don't know why it is, but when race is on stage, and especially when you talk about white privilege, majority white audiences or majority white critics mm-hmm. will push back to go, they get defensive.
Absolutely. And on a certain level, again, once the dust settled, I was like, you know, I think this is actually just showing me that my play is doing exactly what I wanted it to do. It's pushing buttons. Passover, unlike Breach, Passover is a play that is intentionally provocative and intentionally points a finger at the sort of traditional theater audience, which is an upper middle class white audience. I mean, we're programming it in the houses we're programming it in on purpose. I do think that the play is bringing in African American, mixed race, younger audiences to those theaters. So that is a wonderful mm-hmm. thing that it's doing as well. But I'm writing it to the traditional theater audience. And so that's going to bring with it a certain amount of discomfort. It's going to bring with it a certain amount of defensiveness. And so when you see the critiques and the reviews,
embody that.
Embodying
right,
it.
Right.
Really, you're just like, okay, well, I'm upset about it, but also thank you for letting me know I'm doing my job
mm-hmm.
on a certain level.
I love it specifically because it disrupts theater. It's really what you're doing, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you're pushing boundaries. Does it affect your work moving forward when you put on a play that's provocative in nature and on purpose and it has this kind of reaction and you see people being much more passionate and emotional than you may have thought they would be, whether mm-hmm. it be a critic or an audience member or someone who's organizing on social media?
Mm-hmm.
Do you, as a playwright and as a person, Do you think about the next play and be like, maybe I don't, maybe not so much next time? or you know, I don't mean it in a negative way, but does it affect the way you approach your work, how your work is received?
No. Partially because I really, you know, this is going to sound cheesy or mystical or whatever, but one of the turning points for me as far as opening up any level of success or whatever you want to call it. Like, I'm having a moment right now and I'm very grateful for that moment. But something that I had to get squared away in my mind and in my process is that I'm a servant to the work. So if a specific topic or a specific character, or sometimes, like, I have this one play where just the title came and I was just like, I don't even know what this means. I've got to figure out what this means. If that arrives in my consciousness, then that's what I'm working on. And so I'm already deep in the development stage of my next play. And so everything with Passover happened. I was already starting, mm-hmm, you know, the mm-hmm, seeds of that next mm-hmm. play were already happening. And so, again, in order for me to continue to remain happy with the work that I'm doing, because I am my first critic and I think my hardest critic, I just have to be tuned in to the next story that I need to tell. Now, again, like, I do think that, you know, there's always the threat of becoming addicted to the scandal or addicted to the noise. And I think I've built up certain kinds of boundaries in my life where that is not the thing. I mean, it affects me. You know, obviously, when we were going into production with Breach, I was like, oh, gosh, you know, it's Chicago again. Like, some of those same critics might be coming to this. You know what I mean? So I'm not saying that I'm some sort of superhero and that doesn't affect me. But at the end of the day, I just have to tell stories.
When you're telling provocative stories or true stories, emotional stories, personal stories, mm-hmm. is it tougher to drown out the noise? Because you do wear two hats, and you do, I'm sure there'll be many artists who've heard this over and over and over, say, I don't read the reviews, or I don't go near the internet when I'm doing, I don't know if that's true or not. But the point for you is, you know, to be in a position where you are in a profession where there is interaction is important, mm-hmm. engagement is important, you mm-hmm. want to know what your audience thinks. Mm-hmm. How do you react personally when you read those, but then there's also this push and pull that's mm-hmm. happening around the work that you've put on stage?
I mean, I'm a human first. When everything happened with Passover, I think I was just sort of in my feelings first for a couple of days. I definitely remember getting back home right after we opened the show and, you know, my phone blowing up and all of that stuff. And I think I spent just 2 days kind of in my apartment with some, like, not great food and Netflix and just sort of, like, you know, in my feelings being like, what's happening? And then after that, you dust it off and, you know, I got up and I got out. And I am not someone who avoids the reviews because for me, and again, this is totally different for every artist, but for me, the avoidance is actually giving the review too much power. To say, like, oh God, it's kryptonite, I have to avoid it. No, it's just another person with an opinion. And once I've gotten a certain amount of distance, probably I would like a little bit more distance than I had at Passover. Like I said, it happened so quickly and it erupted. It was like, oh, I can't ignore this. I have to mm-hmm. respond. But in general, I think, you know, dethroning the critic in my mind is something that I do when I do read the critic and say, okay, this is your opinion. Granted, you are in a vaunted place. A lot of people are going to read your opinion, but still, it's your opinion.
It's an opinion, right?
It's just an opinion.
Yeah. Breach is on stage now at Victory Gardens, and you've had such a meteoric success in the way that you've had these plays, and I would just reading some stuff today, other stuff that's coming down on the pipe here. Are you in a position, like you said, this is your moment. Do you feel that? Do you feel that, like, you've got projects lined up and you think back to those days of wanting to get into playwriting and where you're at now, and are you reflective about it?
Absolutely. I was actually just journaling the other morning. It's funny that you say that. And I was just, I think I started out journaling because I was feeling a little bit whiny because I'm tired physically. I think the Chicago winter is doing a number.
Yeah.
And I was just like, well, I'm tired. And then I just sat there and I was like, wait a minute, list out everything that's going on. Just write down bullet point, what's going on, what's happening. Yes, that is a lot. But then I was like, now try to describe your life right now to yourself 4 years ago. You know what I mean? And myself 4 years ago to have been like, lies! This is not what's happening. You know what I mean? So I do think that just, like, stepping back and literally just sort of intentionally practicing gratitude, because a lot is happening. I'm getting a certain amount of recognition. I'm, you know, I've got a few other, you know, when theaters start approaching you, after, you know, years. I mean, I graduated from grad school in 2008. So, you know, there were lean years where I was working full time and trying to write on the weekends and in the evenings and failing more than I didn't. And then the rounds and rounds and rounds and rounds and rounds of rejections where it's just like, okay, I don't have a logical reason why I'm continuing to do this. I am literally writing for only me. And so to just sort of step back right, you know, now and just sort of be grateful is really the only way I can continue.
Well, the play is called Breach, A Manifesto on Race in America Through the Eyes of a Black Girl Recovering from Self-Hate. It's on stage running through March 11th at the Victory Gardens Theater. In studio, award-winning playwright Antoinette Nwandu. Antoinette, thanks so much for joining me and my guests at the big table. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dustin, for having me. This is wonderful.